Thank you so much. My name is Tamika. I'm an alcoholic. It's my pleasure to be here, and thank you, Sam, so much for asking me. I think I'm one in a long litany of my sponsor came out to share for your group, and I think pretty much everyone that she sponsors has hence been out here, so it is now my turn. We'll say thank you, no thank you. But, you know, everyone who I talked to about this meeting had just wonderful things to say, you know, and that's the real testament to a home group. My sobriety date is September 20th of 2005. My sponsor's name is Kathleen E., and my home group is the Midtown Group in Washington, D.C. And when I got sober, I was in Los Angeles, and I was sober there for about 10 months or so, and I ended up getting a sponsor, who I'll get to that, who was in the Pacific Group, and I ended up joining the Pacific Group. I had a specific reason for saying all of that, but now I can't remember what it was. Anyway, maybe it'll come to me. I think it had something to do in a general, you know what it was, is that I've moved in sobriety a few times, you know, and a couple of us were talking about it before the meeting. Anyone who moves in sobriety will know that it's a challenge. It can be a challenge to try and reattach to people, to share openly and honestly with people who weren't with you when you were vulnerable and new, to try and like make friends again and feel a lot of those feelings you associate with being a newcomer, but to feel them older and longer sober, have problems that I felt like I shouldn't have, you know. It can be difficult to move, and one of the benefits of going through that process and feeling those feelings is I learned how to recognize a home group very early on. There are a lot of telltale signs of a home group: energy, enthusiasm, love for the program, laughter and smile in people's voices, service. You know, I knew just from talking to Sam that when I got that I could, you know, plan to get here very early, which I ended up getting here early. It's a miracle from God. And I knew that the meeting would be set up, people would be here, and that, you know, coffee would be brewing, that I could come in and, like, you know, rest myself. And that is exactly what happened. You know, people came up and, you know, introduced themselves to me and all know each other. And these are just, and the way everyone talks about this group that I know, those are just telltale signs of a home group. And it's like a beautiful, wonderful thing. Because Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, and where I know that there's a good home group, I know that I'm going to be safe, that there's going to be a solution for me, and that Alcoholics Anonymous isn't going anywhere. It's not changing in any, like, significant way. It's here when people are here practicing it, you know, and it's happened. It's going on all over the place. So thank you for welcoming me. So that being said, again, I'm from California originally, and I was born to two parents. It was the Cold War. My dad was stationed overseas, and I was born there. And my sister was born there, and then, you know, through a series of heavy drinking events, the military career was cut a little bit short, and we came back to the United States very quickly. And then through another series of drinking-related events, my dad and my mom were separated. My dad had a new situation. My mom and my grandfather, you know, got into it, and the violence, and me and my mom and my baby sister, I was like maybe 2 1/2, my sister was maybe 1 1/2, and my mom was pregnant with my little brother, became homeless for some number of months. And where that happened is, I guess, in my hometown. I mean, obviously, I was 2 1/2, so I don't really remember it, but I do kind of remember it. I kind of remember, and I think there are things that shaped my life and really worked with my alcoholism later on, you know? Because the truth of the matter is that experience happened to all of the children in my family. I mean, my brother, he was in the uterus, so, like, he kind of got a pass on that one. But he did come out very small, you know, much smaller than the rest of us. He's not smaller than the rest of us now, but he was for a while. And, but, you know, like, all of the life experiences that I had, for the most part, were shared by my brother and sister, and I'm the only one who comes to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm the only one who, like, drank my life into the ground before it really had a chance to get off, you know, my brother and sister can kind of like look at their lives. They might have dysfunction, whatever, but they can kind of like look at their lives, make changes, make decisions, make a change and go with it and like live a different life. They have a different level of common sense operating in their decision-making process that I literally do not have access to. You know, I mean, like, so we grew up in this like poverty. We were homeless for a little while through a series of very beautiful positive events with the intervention of like some wonderful people. We ended up staying together as a family. We, you know, I mean, I'm mixed. My mom's white, and we all like, you know, moved into this house, and you know, none of that was like in the plans or in the cards. It was going to be like adoption, end of the family, end of life, all of that kind of stuff. And none of that happened. We stayed together, and we moved on, and life kind of like settled down for a little bit there. But I learned a couple of like significant things that continue to want to drive my behavior sometimes. Like, one, there's no such thing as adults. There's no such thing as people who are out there taking care of you. You know, when it's getting dark outside and you're outside and you're cold and you're not going inside and there's no one you can ask for help to go inside to go to sleep, there's no safe place to go, you learn very quickly that you need to be in charge of yourself, you know, and that there's no one that you can actually rely who's reliable. You know, and I know that experience like shook my mom very deeply. Also, she was just a kid. She was like, you know, 25 years old, almost 10 years younger than I am now. And I can't imagine, you know, but that's something I learned. I also learned that to get divorced is to be like, you know, you end up homeless and you might die on the street. Like, that's what I learned. And so single party of one over here. Right. Maybe not an appropriate thing to say, but whatever, you know, it is what it is. And another thing I learned was that if I'm going to take care of myself, I'm going to take care of myself, right? And I'm going to, like, stay focused and stay alert, and I'm going to, like, stay on top of this, and I'm going to be driving my ship from here on out. And we got into a house and, you know, like, nice community, not unlike this community, maybe slightly bigger town, but a small town, you know, like, tight-knit. People say hi to each other on the sidewalk, you know, two high schools, football, 4-H, all of that, you know, good stuff. And lots of churches and all of that. Also lots of drinking. I had mostly, like, you know, things kind of settled down and some more hiccups happened here and there. And I always had a really strong connection to an idea of God. I'm not sure why that is. I just know that I remember someone explaining to me, like, what God was or what religion was. I mean, it was my mom being a little girl and having, you know, they explained this little bit, and then I had all these ideas about, you know, God is your best friend and, like, that's who you're with before you come to earth and, you know, all of these ideas that, you know, I picked up somewhere or whatever. But I had this, you know, kind of close and very intimate relationship with what I thought of as a higher power, and I had this really tight, like, connection. I could almost see it. Like, I could almost see, like a rope, you know, connecting me to some sort of higher power. And, you know, through these things that kind of had happened in my life and, like, some other things continued to happen, there was active alcoholism in my home, you know, the ropes just started to get kind of frayed, you know. And then something else happened. I got hurt, and I made a decision that, like, to pretend like it hadn't happened. And I don't know about you, but I can't live with a lie and expect to be connected to my God. And that rope snapped. And I didn't really know that had happened. And I kind of, like, went into a place of darkness. And, you know, so other than that, I was doing pretty good for an 8-year-old, I guess. But so that's all to say that I, you know, really could have used a drink. And to say that I felt different and to say that I felt apart from and that I felt different from you was first of all, I look different. And I'm telling you, I grew up in a community like this one. You know, secondly, it was the 80s. You know, there was no, like, Beyonce or whatever. You know, thirdly, I was sure that all of that stuff I just talked to you about is why I felt different. I absolutely assumed that my brother and my sister and everyone in my family felt different the same way that I felt different. I know for a fact my mom did. course, she's an alcoholic. But she would talk to me about it, and I just assumed that that's how you felt. If you look different, and if your life is different, and if you're really poor, I mostly felt different. Like, I was, like, really fixated on the poverty thing. And we went to, you know, schools of kids who had – I was just so sure that life would be different, you know, if I just looked different, if we just had a different income, if my parents, you know, made more money, if they took us on vacations. I was so sure that I was upset because of things that were going on outside of me. And no one could have told me that it was any different, you know. And as time went on, I kind of, like, got some glimpses here and there, you know. I was a teenager, and I was first, having an alcoholic parent in your house is kind of like having an active bloodhound in your house, and it's, like, difficult unless they're so drunk that you're drinking their alcohol. I mean, we were poor, so, like, we never had that much excess alcohol in the house for me to be, like, drinking her alcohol and be getting away with it. I mean, also, I was never going to drink like her, right? Like, so I never drank all through high school, never drank. Could have really used a drink, never drank. You know, I'm a good kid, I'm smart, I mean, I never get A's, I never get straight A's, I'm never even, like, trying to get straight A's. I'm basically trying to convince you to give me a really high grade without doing any work. So I get straight B pluses, more or less, and a few A's, like, tempered in there, and the B's look like a whoops, I don't know what happened, but really I'm not doing any work, so I know exactly what's happening. So my whole life became around, like, manipulating other people, looking like I'm doing more than I'm doing, trying to hide the fact, and I'm living a double life on the inside, you know, early on, before I ever drank. You know, it's kind of funny. I got sober in groups that were not young people's groups, and now I'm in a young people's group, and there's so many things that they talk about in their stories that I identify with. I mean, there's a reason I talk so long about my life before I start drinking, because my alcoholism was presenting itself, and I had no idea. I knew that something was wrong, but I had no idea. So these like, you know, teenage alcoholics talk about, like, stealing from their parents, stealing, like, you know, doing jobs, stealing the money, not giving the money back. I did all of that stone sober. You know, they talk about staying up all night, running away, doing all these things, cussing their parents out, talking back, you know, being aggressive physically maybe. I did most of that. Totally sober. I stayed up like days, and I never did a lot of, I mean, I smoked a lot of pot, but other than that, I never did any drugs. Not the kind of drugs that you would, like, make you stay up all day, right? Because I have cousins and, you know, a whole side of the family that's into all of that. I saw it up close and personal, and I was afraid. So I stayed away. But, because I knew that I could not beat drugs. And, I would just, like, stay up all night on nothing, my grit and my anger, you know, like, that's all the drug I need. Like, just like, you know, a teenage alcoholic who's on drugs and all of this wasn't drinking yet and did exactly all, wasn't smoking cigarettes, nothing, and have, like, such a similar story to these people. I mean, it's just so bizarre. So I went off to go to college, and by then, I started drinking right away. I started drinking right away. But as soon, I mean, it was like taillights in the driveway Sunday night before the first Monday of school. And, the girl who had run our little orientation weekend starts doing a keg stand because all the parents are now gone. And I was like, yes, this is the place. And I just started drinking beer. You know, I had moved from my nice town to Los Angeles, which is a good, like, 8-hour drive away from my hometown. Their school is closer by, but I didn't want to be close to home, so I went far. I went as far away as I was willing to go. I had also applied to schools in Florida and New York, or I think I was going to apply to them, and my mom was like, I'll never see you again. I just want you to be in California. And, you know, I knew she was right. Like, once I left, I was just going to be gone, you know. And so I thought, I'll give her these 4 years, you know. She gave it her college try for 18 years. I'll, like, give her this one. I don't even know who thinks like that, but that's how I thought. So I just went as far away as I could and stay in state, basically. And even getting to that school, like, my first real drunk was the weekend before, or not the weekend, but the spring break before school started. I went down there. They had invited me. They paid for it. And for me to look at that school. I was supposed to look at another school in town, never made it there. First night, you know, we do some little orientation stuff. They're talking to us, whatever. And then this, you know, somebody's having the incoming senior class is having a little social at their house. So I go over there. And that was when I got my first real drunk on. I'd had sips of beer here and there. I'd like, you know, smoked, dabbled with this, whatever, here and there. But I had never really had a real buzz on. And they were pouring vodka shots with, like, some sort of lemonade backer in it and, like, Mike's Hard Lemonade, like, all that stuff. Mike's Hard Lemonade and Zima, all those, like, little, like, half drinks, those spritzer drinks were new then. And then I saw the Zima man in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, 4 or 5 years later, which was fun. But getting sober in L.A. can be fun that way. But you know, I got really interested in the alcohol that they were pouring. I'm not sure why. You know, I used to stay away from it. I started, like, my hometown is a party town. You know, it has a reputation in California for being a party town. So I started telling everybody how hard I party because I'm from this town. Total lies. Why I felt the need to tell everybody that I'm from, you know, this hard partying town, I have no idea. But I just have to present myself to you the way that I think is going to be most impressive to you because I'm taking care of myself. No one can be trusted and relied upon. And I am going to convince you to take care of me and to be on my side so that when things go wrong, I have a safety net of people to handle my business for me, right? Like, only alcoholics really think like that. We, like, collect people, my little, you know, Al-Anon basket over here, to call on when the time is right, right? So I decided to do this by telling everybody that I drink a lot and smoke pot really hard. Of course, none of this is true yet. But, you know, I told everybody that, and then I start drinking, and I just start, you know, plus it was really uncomfortable. You know, there's guys, and it seems like there's this the only people there from the incoming freshmen, from the prospective students, are all the girls. Like, all the girls are there, and none of the boys are there. Right, of course. And one of the guys who's there was an actor. He was on TV at the time, so it was, like, kind of glamorous, you know. He's, like, good-looking. He's, like, being very flirtatious and whatever. And I just felt so apart from and so separate from and so less than that I decided to leave them and go over to where the alcohol was, like, 5 feet away. And I just started knocking them back. I just started knocking these shots back. This shot is wrong. You can't give that to her. She's going to, like, have too much alcohol poisoning. I probably knocked back 3 shots before we actually started drinking. And then I started knocking more shots back. And by the time we were leaving, 2 of the people, the older, you know, students, pulled me aside and said, "We're worried about you. You're really drunk." I'll have to tell you, at the time, they had warned us that there was, like, a rapist running around the neighborhood who was, like, raping people in broad daylight. You know, it's a very nice neighborhood where my old school was, and we used to call it, like, a country club in Los Angeles. So to have, like, a rapist running around is uncommon and very scary and dangerous for the student population and for the whole neighborhood, right? So they warned us about, and no, I'm going to get drunk and walk around by myself at midnight anyway, right? Like, not a thought in my mind. And they pulled me over and they're like, "We're worried about you. We think that, you know, your drinking is bad. Like, you're put yourself in a danger. Do you even know where you're walking to?" And I was like, "Oh, I'll find it. I'm from Chico. I drink all the time," you know? Lies. And, you know, where is my common sense? This is the first time I've ever drank, you know? And like a good alcoholic, I'm like a little homing pigeon. I literally walk through the maze, been on the campus for 4 hours or something, in a blackout. I walk through this maze, talk to some people that I kind of remember, blackout again, walk through, you know, where all the apartments are, find the apartment I'm supposed to be at somehow, get into it, fall asleep on the couch, even woke up changed, like, no consequences. And it felt like, well, this is amazing. Went to, you know, college-level class the next day to look at it, which is what we were there to do. See if we want to go there, and had to leave for a little bit to projectile vomit all over the bathroom. Tried to clean it up myself, but I'm basically still drunk. So, you know, somebody had to come in and be like, "No, we actually have to disinfect it because vomit is disgusting, right? It's like pathogens, right? Like, we stop, just go somewhere else. I should have, like, go lay down, right? No, I'm going to go back and pretend like I'm following business calculus." Well, I feel like I am following business calculus. So, like, this is the place for me, right? So I go to school there. So that's like drinking time number one, right? I go down and I'm drunk that first weekend, starting Sunday. We have a 1 week of school. I'm drinking sometimes then. I'm drunk the second weekend. I have some little friends now, and we're going to all the little parties together and hanging out and whatever. And I've noticed already that my drinking is different from that of other people. How did I notice this? My mom tried to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and our literature had been in our house. And at some point, I had picked up this book, the third edition, and I had read part of it. And I don't remember what I read, but I know that I had the concept of the invisible line in my mind. And if you're new, if you're in your first year here in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, you'll hear people talk about the innermost self, or we have to do the first step 100%. It's the only one we have to do 100%. What that means is that I have to be totally convinced, you know, or I have to admit to myself what my experience was when I drank and what my experience is and was when I tried to not drink. And the truth for me was that when I try to not drink, it's like my brain gets itchy. My brain gets itchy and my life starts to feel like, you know, one of my fellows at my meeting now says, like a wool sweater that's one size or two sizes too small. You know, it gets itchy, it gets uncomfortable, I can't move around. And eventually I drink through that, because the first time I drank, I knocked those drinks back, and I felt that warm feeling. You know, it went down hot, it exploded warm. I brought my head back, and there were stars, and the room had changed. And I didn't feel like anyone was threatening. I didn't feel like I was different anymore. I mean, I knew to the core of myself that I was different from all of you nice people, but I felt like, you can't tell I'm different anymore. It doesn't matter. I can win anyway, you know. Alcohol does something for me on a very deep spiritual level. It gives me feelings like hope, possibility, that I can do anything. I mean, our book talks about many people drink for conviviality or for social power. A lot of people talk about drinking for liquid courage, or they talk about drinking and loosening up, drinking to have a better time. These are all normal things that normal people experience, and I experience them too. But that's not what alcoholism is. Alcohol is not supposed to give me a spiritual uplift. If I drink and I feel like, it's all going to be okay, I got it, I'm going to figure it out, I have this big problem, I take a drink, you know what? This isn't really a problem. I got this. It's going to be fine. I'm going to go on that interview tomorrow. I'm going to talk to them tomorrow. I'm going to talk to my landlord tomorrow. I'm going to get that money from somewhere. I mean, honestly, I'm an alcoholic, so probably I will. Probably I will get the money out of nowhere. You know, I'll like razzle dazzle, like wheel and deal, you know, twist somebody's arm, cheat if I have to take care of what I have to take care of, so that nobody comes back and says, like, look at your life, it's falling apart. Have you thought about your drinking? You know, I will protect that at all costs. And alcohol gives me the feeling that I can do all things. Unfortunately, alcohol doesn't actually do that. You know, that's like that's the sad news of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is that's the bear trap of step one, is that it does it to me because I'm an alcoholic, or I became an alcoholic. Either way, I'm an alcoholic now. And when you mix alcohol to me and you stir, I get these feelings of power, significance, peace, love, affection, hope, and spirituality, connection. I am now able to form a true partnership with a human. Well, I can't actually form a true partnership with a human being, but I feel like I'm forming a true partnership with a human being. Everyone in my eyesight is now my brother and my sister. You know, these are things that I used to feel and I used to say. And there were times when I wasn't, before I drank, when I wasn't drinking, when suddenly I'd have kind of like a break in, you know, the noise, the committee in my head. I'd break through it, and I would feel a connection with another person. And I remember distinctly having that experience a couple of times in high school, and the experience was so exquisite, to feel at peace, to feel loved, and to feel okay from my head to my toes, that I remember thinking, I thought this both times, if I died right now, it would be okay. If I died tomorrow, it would be okay, because I feel spiritually free. And let me tell you that I never knew how to produce that feeling. I didn't know it was because I was vulnerable and I like connected with people and I formed partnerships. All I know is that later on I drank alcohol and got it instantly. And there's a part of myself spiritually deep down that will never forget that I can get that connection at any time just by taking a few drinks. And it doesn't have to sound that intense. I mean, none of that sounds believable. I would never explain that to another person. I would just say, yeah, I just want to relax. Yeah, I just want to have a good time. Yeah, we're just coming up with good times. You know, everything's coming up roses. It doesn't matter. I used to want to do this. I used to want to do that. But now I drink a lot. You know, I drank through that final. I drank through the application process of that. You know, I'll just take this other job. It's totally cool. I'm going to have good times. I'm going to have a little vacation. Oh, I don't have any money for a vacation. Oh, I don't have any money for this apartment. I'll sleep in this one. I can sleep in the couch. What does it matter? Life's fine. Life's going to be fine. But slowly, I allowed alcohol to decide what I'm going to do and what I'm not going to do. You know, I once heard this lady talk, and she said, alcohol gave me wings and took away my sky, because it gave me this feeling that I can do anything, that it's all going to be possible. I'm a terribly ambitious person. It's an illness I wouldn't necessarily wish on people. I mean, some people would call it a strength. It's a little bit of both, to be honest with you. It needs a lot of spiritual temperament in order to, like, live right in the spiritual world, in my experience. But unbridled, it just drives me to, you know, I'll drink some alcohol and go to bed feeling like it's all within my grasp. I'm going to start tomorrow. Everything is possible. But I don't actually know what starting tomorrow looks like. I'm not going to sleep on time. I'm not, like, going to sleep restfully because I'm drunk. I'm not drinking any water. Like, you know what I mean? I wake up tomorrow and, number one, I wake up late. Secondly, I wake up drunk. Thirdly, I'll be immediately hungover if I'm not hungover yet. I'm in bad physical shape. You know, I drank for 4 years just while I was in college, and towards the end of my drinking, I was sick all the time and didn't know it. I was nauseous all the time and didn't even know it. You know, headachey, let me tell you, let me get a headache for 5 minutes right now. I will call somebody. I mean, I don't like to take a lot of medicine, but I'm not a person who gets headaches. So I have literally zero tolerance for headaches. I tried to start wearing contacts a year ago. Contacts give me headaches. So, like, out the contacts go. You know what I mean? Like, because it doesn't matter. Nothing's worth a headache in my world, right? It's an interruption to my life that I really don't need. But I, like, same thing with nausea, throwing up. You know, I had an eating disorder all this time, but never, never threw up, right? Because it feels terrible. Like, and I would throw up every 2 or 3 days in the last 6 months of my drinking easily. I was headaches all the time, nauseous all the time, throwing up all the time. And, like, that was just normal by then. Didn't think anything about it. Because then I'd wake up in the morning, I feel terrified because I didn't know how to start all these big plans I had told myself I was going to do the night before. I didn't know how to move forward in my life. I didn't know how to do the homework that I had in before me. I was probably late to my little waitressing job that I had. You know, maybe I made, like, there's puke on my pillow, there's puke in my hair, there's puke in the sink, my roommates are mad. You know, I don't know who did it, probably one of them. I wasn't a big peer, but I was more of a puker. And, you know, somebody's mad, someone's telling me what I did, but they were drunk too, so I kind of take it with a grain of salt. I kind of have a cavalier attitude about what upsets other people, to be honest. Like, I feel like they're overreacting all the time. Unfortunately, it's a defect I'm, like, discovering my later sobriety. I still have this one, which is, like, just, right, no one's allowed to be mad but me. No one's allowed to have a bad feeling but me. My feelings are the only thing that matter, right? Because I have a feeling now, and I want to fix it now. Alcohol used to do that for me. I used to, and then, like, you know, extra cookies used to do that for me. And then little Red Bull used to do that for me. You know, I am so used to, if I have a problem on the inside, I solve it now by putting something in my mouth, you know. By the time, obviously, that's the way that I was living. And I would wake up and I started to feel like my life was running out of my sleeve. You know, there were so many opportunities that I felt that I had lost and let go of, and just, you know, it was almost like, you know, I'm being poured down the drain. My life force is being poured down the drain, and I'm sick all the time, and I literally can't do anything that I said I would do anymore. You know, I can't show up. I had started to build up opportunities for myself just to not show up for them. You know, I was a writer at that time, and I started to be asked to, write four events and like be part of their opening ceremonies or whatever, and just like couldn't show up. Opportunity after opportunity. Musicians would ask me to other student musicians would ask me to, you know, join, do something, collaborate with them, whatever. I got invited to so many opportunities that I just couldn't show up for, either because I was drunk or because I was scared and I didn't have anybody that I could say, I'm scared, what should I do? I don't know what to do next, you know, because I'm in it alone. There's no one to take care of me but me. And like what works at this at a regular pace will work better if I do it harder, faster, like, you know, better, stronger, which wears you out. Then you got to sleep for 3 days, right? I just like I wasn't getting any traction anywhere. And I'm lucky in my case that what precipitated my bottom, well, I mean, then I like studied abroad for a year because like going to Germany is going to fix my life, right? Like, I mean, turns out they drink in Germany. Surprise! Beer is so good in Germany. If you missed it, I'm sorry for you, but I will give you a little recap. The Oktoberfest was a good time. Just wet shoes, wet hair, cold, lost my jacket, left it at some dude's house. Now I got to go to the hospital to get some medicine to make sure I'm not pregnant with some dude's baby who's like, you know, not even German, whose last name I don't know and could never find again if I had to. Clear, apparently a total phenomenon in Germany, right? I'm healthy, so let's drink to that. You know, stoned and drunk in the park, inside a Christmas tree, rolled in a banknote, just like wherever, whenever. That was how I lived, and I came home, and like I couldn't turn that off. I couldn't control and enjoy my drinking anymore, you know, because before that, I had really, really controlled it. I had really, really controlled it. I came home and I couldn't control it anymore. So then, like, you know, the downhill starts to happen, like I was explaining to you, the feelings, the awareness. And my mom had gone to AA, so I started to go to AA. And then I went to a doctor to get some medicine because a friend of mine had gotten some medicine, and that seemed like the answer, you know, because I knew there was something wrong. You know, I just wanted an answer. And drinking just did not seem like the problem. You know, I drank with a lot of people who it seemed like they drank more than me. You know, my friends in college, I came back from Germany. I feel like I'm skipping around a little bit, but I came back from Germany, and my friends from that experience, they were all heavier partiers, more popular partiers than me, and we all lived in this house together. And it just seemed like they drank more. It seemed like they always had to pull me to come out and drink with them. But we're good girls. So we go out drinking. We have, like, a couple of drinks at the bar. So, you know, we'll drink a little bit. We'll pre-party. We'll get together and have our connectivity time, whatever. You know, we pre-party. We pre-game before. None of them know that I'm drinking in the shower before they get there. I pre-game for the pre-game on my own, you know. I mean, drinking in the shower is amazing also. If you missed it, like alcohol in Germany, I will give you a recap. Drinking in the shower is the most, like, luxurious, powerful, beautiful thing, I mean, out in the drinking world that I ever experienced. It was amazing. The big drawbacks are, one, I like to take very hot, long showers, so the ice melts, like, nearly immediately. So you have to, like, drink fast and then go run sopping wet into the kitchen, drink, like, pour another one, run back. I tell you, it only takes you doing that twice before you never have that problem again. You just bring the alcohol in the bar with you into the bathroom where it proceeds to melt faster. So then you find a different drink that doesn't need ice. Then you find a bottle, because there's that one time where you almost fall and, like, you know, the glass bottle almost goes everywhere on the tile. It's fine. I'll just drink pop-off. Why? It's in plastic. It'll bounce. You know what I mean? And also, it's very effective. Also, it's vodka. No one will smell it, right? These are the life hacks. These are the intelligent things that I came away from my education with. So I'm drinking like that. I was sick a lot, and my life was running out of my sleeve. And, you know, I'd gone to that doctor, and he asked me if there was a problem with alcoholism in my family, and I started going to meetings of Al-Anon. And that started bringing up stuff for me that I did not want to have anything to do with, and my drinking got way worse really fast. And I was doing my step work in the bar, which seems strange, but that it made perfect sense to me at the time. And for my third step, I decided to quit drinking. Common thing in Al-Anon, actually. People, they quit drinking, steps 4 through 9, some meetings. At least in my group, it was like that. And I found I couldn't do it. I really couldn't, and I was really trying. I really wanted to. You know, my last night drinking, I was trying to not drink. You know, I didn't want to drink. There was everything about it I didn't want to drink. I was at work. You know, I'd had some bad experiences drinking at work, about which any other young woman alcoholic can tell you later. But I had lots of experiences, and they were running around waiting alongside with me. And I didn't want to go down that road anymore. You know, I didn't want to have any more experiences like that. I didn't want to drink what they were drinking. They're drinking tequila. Tequila gives me, I mean, if alcohol gives me a positive personality change, tequila is like I'm an unrecognizable different person, like, you know, taking my clothes off, whatever, like on top of the table. That's not really my personality. I would rather be in control, which is to say, like, sitting down, like thinking about what you're thinking about so that I can control what you're thinking about. Like, that's more my style. So I didn't want to drink their tequila. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And my boss at the time offered us a drink after a hard shift, and I literally couldn't think my way out of it. I'm self-reliant. I've relied on education and my brain and whatever, and I could not think my way out. I'm telling you, I lived a quarter of a mile away from that restaurant. There were people who were leaving when I decided to stay and drink, but because the one person who I had asked to give me a ride was going to stay and have one drink, I couldn't say no to him. I couldn't call my roommate a quarter of a mile away to come pick me up. She was also like my best friend at the time, right? I couldn't think my way out of it, and I started crying because I didn't want to drink, but I absolutely had to. And I put all of my mental like focus and weight on this problem. For about, I mean, it felt like a long time. It felt like half an hour. It's probably much shorter than that. But I went back inside, and I knocked that tequila back, and it slid back, and it was warm, and it hit my stomach, and it exploded, and it was hot, and I brought my head up, and suddenly I had never seen people I wanted to be with more. And I felt joy, peace, freedom, connection, and alive. And I totally forgot that I didn't want to drink. Not like I was like, oh, what do I think about that for? Who cares? As though I had never thought about it in the first place. My mind was like wiped clean. Alcohol completely controlled what I thought. Not just the decisions I made, but what I thought. And when I woke up the next morning and realized that that was what had happened, I was scared. And for this little, you know, girl who had brought so many problems to school and had brought so many problems to her family and brought so many problems to alcohol, I had wanted to die for a long time. So I was 22 when I got sober. I was talking to this. I was at this DC has a gratitude breakfast every year. And I was at it earlier today. I was talking to a guy who has like 2 months or something. I don't know how old he is, but I think he's in his late 20s or something like that. And he was surprised to hear that I got sober when I was 22. And I was like, it's totally fine to get sober when you're young. All it means is that you've wanted to die for a long time, just like anybody else who gets sober. You know, and somebody thought it was a good idea that you go to a meeting. Like, whether you knew about it yourself or you decided to go on your own. I mean, I had wanted to die for a long time. And what I can tell you was different about that day was that day I was convinced that I was on a road that was leading to my death. You know, whether that's true or not doesn't actually matter because I was convinced that it was true. And that when I felt that reality that I am going to die soon and there's nothing I can do about it, whether it's because of like the physical alcohol that I'm drinking or more likely because I have like weird old street stuff deep inside of me, and it was starting to call my name, and I was starting to hang out with people that were totally different for me, living totally different lives, and I was starting to go farther and farther outside of my, you know, beaten little, you know, college co-ed path. And I knew I'll end up in some situation I shouldn't be in. I'll say a thing I shouldn't say. I'll ask a question when I should duck. I will get myself into a situation I can't get myself out of, and I'll be a casualty to that. And that day when I was sure that that was imminent and going to happen, something inside of me said, live. And out of my mouth came the words, it's over, I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can tell you to this day I did not choose to say those words. I didn't make that choice. I just heard someone say it, and I realized that the voice was mine, you know. It was a long time before I realized that that is what a white light spiritual experience looks like for me, you know, and that as much as I had had this life with this God, that I believed was accessible to everyone. And, you know, I knew before I came here and had this, you know, conscious awareness relationship with, I began looking back. I was able to see that that God, that energy, that power had never left me. I had to cut myself off from it so that I could live the life that I wanted to live. I could tell myself the story I wanted to tell, and I could live in that life, because I can't be connected to God and live in an alternate reality. I have to be living in the reality. And I called this woman I had met in an AA meeting, and she came to get me, and we went to a meeting, and that was June 20th of 2007, or yeah, 2005. And I just was like, it was like someone had just, you know, uncorked me somewhere in my head, and everything had spilled out. I was completely empty. There was no thoughts. There was a dull feeling, but there was no energy. There was no decision making. The only decision I made day to day for the first few weeks was I went to a meeting every day, you know. And when I was at the meeting, my second day of sobriety, I went, I mean, of course, alcohol is like pouring out of me. I'm starting to detox. So I'm feeling sick. 5 days later, I start to feel less sick. And I was like, oh my God, I've been sick for the last 6 months. Who knew, right? Like, I mean, when's the last time I didn't drink for 5 days in a row? I mean, a year maybe? I have no idea. These women said, well, I'm celebrating, I don't know if it was 12 years or 17 years. I think it was 12. She said, I'm celebrating 12 years. We're going out to dinner. Do you want to come with us? Well, I don't have any ideas. So I just said yes. All I have is a car. So I said yes. Why I would say yes to that, I have no idea. Probably because I had low self-esteem. I want people to like me, you know, which is a defect that God worked to my advantage in Alcoholics Anonymous for a very long time, until it was lifted out, when it started to cause pain to other people and myself. And I went there, and they're just, you know, I'm sitting there like a bump on a log, eating my soup or some greasy food or whatever the heck, you know, not talking to anybody. They're all like brightly dressed and handing gifts to this woman, and she's like in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're like all talking amongst each other, and different times of sobriety. And at one point, she kind of stops and looks over at me, and they all, you know, kind of stopped and looked at me, and she said, you know, I think it's harder to get 2 days than it is to get 12 years. And there was something about that that told me that she understood how I felt, because I deeply believed that I felt different than other people and that my problem was not really alcoholism. I didn't believe I had alcoholism at that time. So how did it come to be that I believed that I have alcoholism, that alcohol changes me, that it changes my perception, which is to say it makes everybody else outside of me look differently? Because I didn't believe it. I had seen an alcoholic, my mom. I had seen other heavy drinkers around me, and I just didn't buy it. You know, certainly have some problems, but like alcoholism is not one of them. And so it started to happen. I mean, in our book, if you read it, which I highly suggest, it talks about, if you're not sure if you're an alcoholic, go do some controlled drinking. And it says this a couple of times. It also says some other things that people say, which are almost nobody talks about, but it says, like, try staying sober for a while. See what happens. That was the tack that I ended up trying, because I didn't believe that I was an alcoholic. Therefore, staying sober shouldn't be that hard. Also, it's something that I really need to do right now. I totally identified with a guy who, like, was ambitious to be successful at work and stopped drinking when he was, you know, 30 or whatever, and stayed sober for 55 years and then started drinking again. I was like, hey, you know, I mean, I'll just stick with the early part of his story, right? the stop drinking on my own grit. I looked at the 12, I mean, I had studied philosophy and religion. I'd had this close relationship with God, so I looked at the 12 steps, and it didn't seem that far-fetched. You know, almost every major religion and philosophy in the world has something that looks kind of like that in some order. And I was like, oh, I'll get a year of basically free therapy. I can't afford shock treatment, so this will do. And I'll make amends to everyone, which will prompt all of them to make amends for me for all of the ways that they hurt me and failed me and didn't show up for me. Let me tell you, I've been waiting for that day. So, like, I'm in. Amends to me is at the finish line. I'm in. Give it a year, maybe two, kind of a special case. And I'll keep doing that. And so I started to have strange experiences trying to stay sober, which is to say, early on, I had these experiences of the first one that was really strange was I had a drinking dream. And drinking dreams are terrifying, right? I mean, drinking has literally become a nightmare. What used to be my normal way of life makes me wake up feeling like hives and very, very insecure. So what happened for me was I was going to these meetings at 11, from 11 p.m. to midnight most nights because I was still working at this restaurant. So I was going to meetings throughout the day, mostly women's meetings or whatever, and then I'd go to this, like, midnight meeting, and then I'd go home. And on this day, I woke up and I had this distinct memory of wanting to taste my last three drinks again because I had gotten sober. It kind of happened fast. I hadn't really planned for it. I just wanted to taste my three favorite drinks one more time. So I had gone to a bar and ordered my three favorite drinks. I remembered seeing them in like fuzzy brownout, you know, memory, which is very believable. It's like my actual memory, the way it used to be. If it had been crisp and clear, it would have been obvious it was a dream, right? But I seemed drunk in the dream. So, yeah, that seems like it happened. That I looked at them and I, you know, remembered feeling drunk, but I didn't really remember drink. Anyway, the woman that I was staying with, my roommate, when I had, like, toddled my way home with my little alcoholic, like, homing device and my last night drinking, I had done some things, and I was not really welcome in their house anymore because I wasn't really living there. I was on the couch waiting for her lease to run out so that we could, like, get an apartment together, me and my friend. And I did not make any friends that night. And I woke the whole house up, and she told me the next morning, which is part of what precipitated my thing, was, you know, she was like, do you know what you did? Well, let me tell you. I don't think anybody who had ever told me what I'd done the night before who hadn't been drunk at the time, you know, and it was nothing nice. It was nothing that I wanted to be associated with. And so I'm terrified. She was like, I don't know what's going on with you, but you can't stay here if it's going to be like that. So I wake up from this drinking dream with 8 days. Number one, did I drink? Number two, does she know? Number three, I'm now homeless and live in my car. And then I'm thinking, well, at least I have a car. AA, they say, be grateful. I'm grateful I have my car, you know, like, crazy. And so I'm like thinking, trying to figure it out, like really into my thinking. And as time goes on, I'm like, you know, trying to see if she's awake, trying to like make some noises on my little, like, you know, blow up pad. Is she there? Is she mad? After a while, I start to realize, you know, she doesn't seem mad. She's not awake waiting for me. Like, you know, these telltale signs of when someone's really mad and just, like, waiting for you to get up, right? We've all experienced this. And so I come to feel like, okay, I think I made it through that one. I'm not kicked out. I'm not homeless. Well, what am I going to do about AA? Am I going to tell the people in AA? I was like, why would I tell the people in AA? I'm not planning on staying sober forever anyway. I'll just lie. And then in my gut, this thought of, you can't stay sober if you lie, you know? And I knew it was true. And I was like, well, what are you going to do, start over? Start at one day? Give up the 8 days you have? And then my gut said, I can't get 8 days again. And I knew that that was true also. And then I started arguing with it. What do you mean you can't get 8 days again? You're not even an alcoholic. This shouldn't even be hard for you. I can't get 8 days again. That's ludicrous. Of course you can get 8 days again. You're not even an elf. I can't get 8 days again. And I started to feel a sensation of fear and terror grip me. I didn't understand, what does that mean? What does that mean that I can't get 8 days? I was like, well, is that what they talk about in AA? Maybe this is what they're talking about. Maybe I'm an alcoholic. I go to this meeting later that night and tell these women, and, you know, I've been trying to do the AA thing, so, like, I mean, I didn't hate the big book anymore. I had hated the big book. I got sober. I lost all my ideas. I didn't hate the big book anymore. Like, going to meetings, I was trying to remember to do the things they say. They say, like, you know, pray on your knees every morning when you wake up for your sobriety. I'm like, who can actually remember to do that every day? You know, they said, well, put your slippers under your bed. I'm like, okay, it's California. It's June. It's hot. as Blaze is outside. Who wears slippers? What are you even talking about? Secondly, I have a mattress on the floor. I don't have a bed. You can't put anything under it. Like, who are you? I don't even understand what you mean. Like, I can't picture what you're trying to get at. Put my slippers under the bed if I have to get on my knees and reach under it and get it. I'm like, who lives like that anymore? How old are you people? So I go to this meeting. This woman talks about, and in the meeting, there were a bunch of people who had lost their sobriety, women who had a woman 6 years, 10 or 12 years, and a woman with more than 20 years. All three of them had lost their sobriety and were in their first year again, and then I'm in my first year the first time, right? And everyone was baffled. They were all a baffled lot. And then I'm more baffled because I'm like, I can't get 8 days again. Here, they can't even, they stay sober 6 years. They're not out of the park. They still, like, she drank after 6 years. She drank after, you know, whatever, however many years. She drank after 20-something years. I have no idea. And, like, none of them had actually drank. They had all taken drugs, you know? And I thought, well, what is this? Like, how do you get out? Like, how do you know you're out? And this woman said, she had 38 years. She said, I never heard of anybody who drank on a day when they prayed for their sobriety in the same day. And no one ever had to remind me to get on my knees to pray again. These are the types of spiritual things that happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is, I think, what they mean when the old-timers say that Alcoholics Anonymous is doing for me slowly what alcohol did quickly. Alcohol gave me this feeling of reassurance, power, faith, that I can do anything if I just put my energy, my work, and my mind behind it. And then I continued to prove to myself day after day after day that none of those things were true. I'm incapable of doing everything. And Alcoholics Anonymous, I hear something that somebody says in a speaker meeting. I read something in the book. I'm listening to my sponsor, and I get this idea, and then suddenly I'm able to do what I was unable to do before. And it's happening without me realizing it, you know? So over time, things like that started to happen. I started to become convinced that I was an alcoholic. By the time I had 30 days, I had a sponsor, and we started going through the steps. And then I, you know, had another sponsor. We're going through the steps, and we're doing a fourth step, and we're kind of like, you know, we're doing it the way that she has it. We're doing a fourth step out of the book. Then eventually I get this other sponsor, this woman who's in this other group. I mean, meantime, I had 6 months, still not totally convinced I'm an alcoholic, not all the time. I go through, like, short periods where I'm convinced, and then other periods where not really, you know. I had got 6 months. And my hair turned a different color. I had this, like, terrible, terrible acne. All fell off, and there was a bump in all of my fingernails. And they were like, oh, well, you stopped kicking. And I was like, well, what do you mean? I'm not kicking. And they're like, you know, you're literally kicking over here in the meeting. Like, you know, I was like, I stopped detoxing. Well, I'd only drank for 4 years. It didn't seem reasonable that I would have those types of physical ramifications if I was not an alcoholic. If I wasn't somehow metabolizing alcohol differently than other people, I shouldn't have had any of those physical peculiarities. 6 months happens. I'm, like, going to meeting every night. By now I have commitments everywhere because I like to be a good girl. I like to, you know, operate on my own power. I like to, you know, do my own thing. So I have, you know, meeting. I have a commitment every night. My car is full of, like, literature and this and that. I'm honestly trying to apply myself to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I find myself kind of coming to and driving by my old dive bars on my way home, way out of my way home, and not knowing how I got there. You know, I, like, the whole week that I got 6 months, I went into brownouts, or, you know, had this, one time I had this compulsion to drink grip me so profoundly that it, like, took over my tongue, and then it took over my mind. And then it took over my hands, and then it took over my whole body. And in California, you can leave your house and buy alcohol until 2 in the morning at anywhere, at a CVS, at a grocery store, anywhere. And then at 2 o'clock in the morning, they stopped selling it. And I was terrified that I would leave my house because my hands wanted to, like, grab my car keys, and my feet wanted to drive to the car and go, like, my hands and my feet and my whole body wanted to get out of the house and go get some alcohol, and I did not know what would happen. And I had heard they said, sit on your hands if you don't know what to do. So I sat on my hands on my bed, and my whole body was like, get up, get out, go get some. And I laid down on the bed to sit on my arms, essentially, and I fell asleep. I woke up 20 minutes later, and it was gone. And I'm so grateful I've never had something that powerful again since then, but I never want to have that feeling again. And I thought, if I'm not an alcoholic, I shouldn't feel like that, you know. So time goes on. And eventually I had, you know, a first step experience. I don't remember what the person said, but I just remember kind of like feeling almost like I heard a clang, you know, that like I'm in this trap that I can't get myself out of, because deep down inside of me, I always know that there's a way to get out of however I'm feeling. And because I live in a world, you know, I'm going to have feelings at some point that I'm going to want to get out of. There's no getting out of it. There's no like perfect life I could be living where I'm going to feel great all the time. You know, that's not real. What's real is that I have these feelings and I want to get out of them because I'm an alcoholic. Simple as that. So I start doing the other steps. You know, I went through, I did the fourth step, I did the fifth step with this sponsor, and I got to tell you, like, you know, I brought a lot of problems to Alcoholics Anonymous. My first few fourth and fifth steps did not have a whole lot of, like, information in them. You know, there's, like, a lot of, like, depression, big things that had happened to me. It wasn't a lot of my character. It took me a few times to get to it. And even then, I was in my early 20s. I hadn't lived a lot of life. I hadn't seen my own patterns of the type of adult that I would become someday. You know, I wasn't yet convinced about my character and my defects, so it took me a little while to see a lot of those things. But as those things started to happen, I did the, you know, sixth and seventh step work that my sponsors asked me to do, and which was, like, different sometimes. Sometimes, like, you know, read step six and step seven in the 12 and 12 alternating days for 2 weeks, and sometimes it's, like, you know, read this stuff here, and sometimes it's write about your defects of character, or sometimes it's pray on one defect every day and ask God to show you what it looks like in your life. Don't actually recommend that one. It's very powerful and quite disturbing. So, I mean, if you want to get over it quickly, then yes, it will help you do that, but it will make you feel depressed and shitty first. Oh, sorry for the tape. But I did that, and then armed with those facts about myself, like, who am I? Who am I really? I'm a person with disregard for my family and friends. I'm a person who will make you wonder if I'm okay and make you worry about me through my actions and then completely cut you off from my life and just leave you wondering and hanging. You know, that's me drunk and that's me sober. Who am I really? I'm a person who will not steal from you outright. I'll give you something, but only after you gave me money to buy it. You know, I am a taker. I feel like I don't have enough and I need you to give me things. You know, I'm a person who also, like, doesn't care what you have to say. So you could be yakking at me, and depending on who you are, if I don't need something from you, like, say, if you're just a loved one or family member or whatever, then I don't have time. You know, I don't want to hear it. I don't have time for you. I don't want to hear about your family. I don't care about your day, you know, if I don't have something to get from you. And getting all of that information taught me what I needed to make amends for, the kind of person that I was, what harm is, you know. And it was a couple of years before I could really make amends to that kind of stuff and have any kind of faith, have built a relationship with a higher power one step at a time, who through these incredible, painful experiences where I had, you know, early in my sobriety had wanted to drink, like, over and over, and somehow woke up sober. I had built this relationship, and even though, like those times when I wanted to drink and didn't believe I'd stay sober, I didn't believe that saying sorry or, you know, making amends and explaining my wrongs to my mom, to my brother and sister, to people that I had hurt, neglected, let them know they were not the most important thing or even an important thing in my life, you know, that I believed that Alcoholics Anonymous would work and that it might be okay. You know, I made those amends and have started and rebuilt relationships like that, and I started to have strings of good days. You know, and life started to feel very, very different. It started to feel very different, and that's what Alcoholics has to offer you here. You know, if you're new and you haven't felt different, or if you feel like, you know, life is a treasury and it's just blah, 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 it takes a while. It took me a long time to start to feel really good consistently, but I'll tell you, it was worth every minute. Because it certainly got better leading up to the days when I started to feel good consistently. But once I started to feel good, to feel like I am okay in my skin as I am, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with you. You know, I don't wake up feeling that way every day. Or I could wake up feeling that way and then abuse somebody later on. But, like, you know, I still am living a fundamentally different life. And because of that, I was able to go for things. When I had, you know, an opportunity come before me to apply for, you know, this job that was in Washington, D.C. and is working at U.S. embassies around the world, I went for it. I was scared. I called people and told them I was scared. You know, and they sit on the phone while I did the application, and then somebody helped me with this, and somebody helped me with that, and I went on a little interview because I had a little prudent reserve saved, and I came back, and I passed the interview, and I went on, and, you know, and the experiences, and, I mean, I got to take AA books in a foreign language to a country where there was no AA, you know, and I didn't get to start a meeting because of the way that the culture was there. I tried. I met with doctors. I said, well, could I leave some pamphlets here at your practice? And he said, no. If anyone ever saw it, they would never come here because alcoholism is so stigmatized. It was illegal in this country. You know, you could, if you went to hospital and told them it was from drinking that you got sick, they would arrest you before your treatment was over. And I got, after living there for 2 years and getting some understanding for the culture and not being there to, like, you know, start AA in some new country because, oh, there's no AA. The alcoholics will be really easy to spot. Ha, ha, ha. I mean, they were. But that didn't mean that I had any, I could help them. All I had was a story. But I didn't have the particular way that Bill talks about in this book to carry a message of strength and hope that will reach another person. It took me 2 years to be able to be put in front of some people where I could carry a message to some people. God has used me in very surprising and unsuspected ways. And really, the adventure is just beginning because I only have 12 years. I mean, I have 12 years, but I also only have 12 years. And more important than the 12 years is the day I have today and the day I had yesterday. The day I have today is the only assurance that I will have a good day and, like, continue to do the things Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to do tomorrow. You know, the only assurance that I'll have another 12 years is, am I working Alcoholics Anonymous today? If I work it today, it's more likely I'll work it tomorrow. Am I asking, was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? When I wake up in the morning, am I asking, remove pride? Remove my self-centered thoughts. Help me to stay on time. So it's really a privilege and an honor to get to share the message of Alcoholics Anonymous with other people and to show how my life was regenerated. Because I'm 34 years old, I would have died when I was 27 because I never intended to see my 28th birthday. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me that, and I hope I can give Alcoholics Anonymous something else back. Thanks for letting me share. Thank you.